it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Good afternoon and welcome along to another episode of Red Tinted Glasses here live on the Red Tinted Glasses YouTube channel. And a special start to the show today. Happy birthday, Callum. Thank you for getting out of your bed to join us on your birthday.
It's okay. I'm in a reasonable condition. I thought I probably wasn't going to be, but here we are. Thanks very much for the birthday wishes. And a relatively positive podcast on my birthday, I think's in store. So that's nice.
I know. It's always nice that I don't have to, you know, be moaning to you on your birthday, or you don't need to moan about it as well. But we will start the podcast with a few moans. We'll get them out the way early doors. We're going to speak about the cup final. Since we came on, we obviously spoke about the allocations and what may or may not happen. The club have been awarded 19,500 tickets for the cup final. They're not being afforded the chance despite their robust pleas to the SPFL. And of course, we're going to be housed in the East Stand and South Stand only. Thoughts on that, Callum?
I'm not surprised, if I'm honest. The fact we've got 19,000, they're getting 25,000, they're getting their end. It's sort of what we were all expecting.
Yeah.
It's still a bit of a joke that they have their own end. Apparently it's for policing or whatever like that, and then they can't make it an even split because of the sort of the way the sections work, but they can do it for Celtic against Rangers. There's no one else. Doesn't seem to make sense. It's what we expected. Let's just hope the outnumbered but never outfought banner is back, and the same result as the last time that banner was on show.
I know, I was laughing because we put that picture up on our Twitter page, and I was laughing at the Rangers fans replying, missing the point completely, saying, "Oh, what's your point? You're just, you know, putting up pictures of a half-empty Hampden." I was like, well, the result still stood that day. What do you make of the pricing for the final? £39 for an adult for the East, £44 for the South. The club delighted to see concession pricing, although quite on the steep end, £26 I think it is for the East and £22 for the South. I think it'll be the most youthful attended cup final going by those prices.
I mean, you wouldn't be surprised, would you, considering it's for only for 16-year-olds, is it? Up to 16-year-olds? It doesn't include, so a 17-year-old who could still be in school would still have to pay £39, which seems absolutely fucking ridiculous, if I'm honest. It's extortionate. I don't know, you know, I presume that was agreed. I don't know who between, but I heard that it was potentially all four clubs, not even just the two finalists. It's out of order, if I'm honest. A week before Christmas, for both sets of fans, plenty have been travelling abroad. So therefore, money's going to be tight as things are, let alone with the way things are at the moment. And to charge those fucking prices for a final is just absolutely ludicrous. And, you know, people complained about our attendance in the semi-final. Had that been more affordable as well, perhaps more people would have gone to that. It's a joke. It's too expensive. In fact, a 17-year-old would have to pay, if they're going to play by those, £39. It's far too much.
Yeah, exactly. Play by the rules. The joys of supporters' clubs, they call them. On top of already being, you know, you mentioned there affordable, one thing as well before we get on to obviously last night's draw over in Greece. December, obviously, a very expensive month as it is. I'd wonder what decision or why the SPFL decided that our rescheduled game against Livingston needed to be fitted in 3 days after the cup final, giving Aberdeen a total of 9 games in the month of December. Absolutely crazy schedule that we've got coming up. I think I worked it out, it's like 6 or 7 games in 16 days or something like that.
It's madness. I don't know why they've squeezed it in there when there's plenty time to fit that in between now and the split. Seems ridiculous when, you know, we're playing in Europe as well, so we have obviously naturally got a lot more games, plus the cup final. As a fan, though, quite looking forward to the month of December. I enjoy that there's a lot of games, but logically, it's very, very stupid to put it in there. But who'd have thought that from the powers that be? It's not like them to make stupid decisions, is it?
Yeah, I think as well, though, I think it's 6 home games for us out of the 9. So at least, you know, we've had a lot of travelling in November, October. So at least, you know, we can get some home comforts in as well. But an absolute unnecessary need to put that game in. So anyway, we've got the gripes out the way, get them out early doors. And we'll now go on to a bit more positive things, because despite bowing out of European football for the season, we've still got 2 games to play, of course, the Dons can be proud as they held their heads high in a very respectable 2-2 draw against Pauk over in Greece last night. Callum, initial full-time thoughts on the game, first of all?
Quite proud, to be honest. Obviously, yeah, unfortunately, we won't be progressing. I think we would have known that at the start of the group, to be fair. However, I think we put on a very good showing last night. It was obviously backs to the wall. Perhaps with the first goal, we could have done a little bit better. But the showing from the team, I thought, to stay in the game, in fact, to come back as well, was excellent. And the fact that we've not been in Europe for a very long time and we've put in a decent showing. And on other days, these games, we might have had better results. Think about against Pauk, foul throw. Helsinki last night did pretty well in Frankfurt. I'm proud, to be honest, which is weird considering we're out with 2 games to spare. So it's weirdly positive, and the fact it keeps a run of decent results going as well, with Motherwell in the league, winning in the semi-final and going to a good side, let's be honest, and picking up 2 points in a very difficult in a very difficult venue. I'm just glad it sort of keeps that momentum going. I'm glad also the travelling fans got 2 goals to celebrate there too.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that was the first thing I messaged Becky. Of course, it was her birthday yesterday. She was over in Greece watching the game, and I think that's the first thing I messaged her and said, I'm so glad you got a bounce to celebrate as well. It was the same, you know, in Frankfurt. I was glad that, you know, probably expecting a 4-5-0 defeat, and you get something to celebrate. It makes the trip worthwhile, and those that were there certainly have those memories for a lifetime as well. And I think, you know, proud is obviously a word that's going to be banded out a lot. And I think, you know, the Dons do have a lot to be proud about in the way we've held ourselves in this group. There's a double-edged sword. There's a comment coming from Kaiser I'm going to kind of come on to in a minute around that. But, you know, we've more than held our own in all games. And I think Barry Robson made that point last night. You know, a bit more luck, maybe a bit more streetwise, you could say, in Europe. We could be sitting here speaking about going to Helsinki and in still contention for qualification. But unfortunately, these are the fine margins that come with European football, and maybe that little bit of naivety. Obviously, the triple substitution in the Pauk game, you know, 15 minutes in at home against Helsinki, where we didn't get going. You obviously mentioned the foul throw, not putting a man on the post from a corner. It's just so fine margins. But, you know, I think the way we've acquitted ourselves, you just need to look at the way Celtic acquitted themselves in Madrid, an absolute drubbing, Rangers last season. drubbed week in, week out in Europe. We've lost the games we've lost by one goal. We know we've not been disgraced by any sense of an imagination. But as Kaiser says, you know, he feels we could have done far better in the group. Helsinki and Pauk should have been two wins. And I suppose that is going to be probably the niggling thing at fans, and I'm sure Barry Robson and a few of the players, that we've maybe let ourselves a little bit down in those home games, not taking more than the point we've done so far.
Yeah, I think so. I agree with Kaiser there that we probably should have won both those games at home. Certainly, perhaps, with the situation we found ourselves in at Pauk before we chucked it all away, and then you throw in the referee decision as well. And likewise, with Helsinki, we weren't fantastic. However, their goal shouldn't have stood. We should have performed better on the night, though. I think that's fair to say. And we should have taken, you'd probably argue, maybe 4 points from those games, and then going across to Helsinki perhaps with a win, we could have still been sort of in the hunt. However, I think for a lot of these players, you know, it's the first time they've been involved in this sort of thing. It's a long time for us as fans that we've seen Aberdeen involved, and the fact we've not been disgraced when perhaps we could have been, and perhaps we would have thought we would have been as well. I think gives us reason to be confident, and you know, we can go to Helsinki, we can win that and not finish bottom of the group. I don't think that's a disgrace at all. So I'm relatively happy, and the experience that the players will get, also the experience the fans have got travelling abroad, I think is only a good thing.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point. The Helsinki game, albeit meaning nothing in terms of qualification, it means something in the fact, as you rightly say, go over there and win would guarantee us third place in the group, which I think we even discussed we would be pretty happy with if that's where we, you know, finished in the group. And I think, you know, we've not disgraced ourselves overall. So a lot to be proud of. But if we look back on the game last night, Callum, Stewie Walker that regularly listens to this podcast when he's working away up the road, always mentions about team lines and people's comments when the team news comes out. And I think there would have been a lot of pant pissing, I think it's fair to say, when the team news came out and Ryan Duncan's in there and so is Duke as a lone striker. I know certainly I thought, what the fuck is going on here? With more so Duke as a lone striker, given kind of his success rate previously at working on his own. And definitely surprised to see Ryan Duncan involved. But I'm sure anyone that publicly voiced their concern was quickly deleting it after that performance. What was your thoughts seeing the two changes, obviously Leighton Clarkson and Miolski dropping out?
When I read the team, I was a bit, confused is maybe the word I'd used. I certainly thought Dante Povara would start this game. I thought it's the kind of game he suited him. I mean, when we've seen him come in from the start, you know, like Frankfurt away, for example, Ibrox, he's done excellently in games where we have our backs against the wall. So I thought he would perhaps start. In a way, he wasn't really surprised to see Miolski not start, considering how... Yeah. Absolutely knackered he was over the weekend. I was a little concerned for the same reason as you, basically, in terms of Duke's success rate when he's played up there by himself. However, good to see he's proven us wrong, and good to see he's back amongst the goals also.
Yes, exactly. I gave him a wee message on Instagram last night to congratulate getting back on the goal trail. But I think when you look at the lineup last night, it really required a lot of discipline in terms of the performance, everyone sticking to their task. And we were obviously set up to be a kind of counter-attacking side. And I think it's fair to say that everyone, including the substitutes, did their job to a man last night.
Yeah, I agree. It was a lot of back against the wall stuff. But I thought when we did get the chance to break, we did well. Obviously, the fact we grabbed two goals away at Pauk is pretty impressive, considering some previous Scottish results there in the not-so-distant past, may I add. But I thought, to a man, they were excellent. They pulled their weight. And I think that it just sort of, it gives me a better feeling about sort of even the weekend, which I'm sure won't last very long. But the fact that we're still getting decent results, and that's a run of three now. It's been a while since that's been the case. And it just gives me a little bit of hope toward going into what's a pretty difficult spell of fixtures, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, I mentioned there the team was kind of maybe set up to be a counter-attacking side, but quite ironic then that our goal very, very much felt route one football. I was kind of questioning where Keller Rose's kick was going out to a very isolated Nicky Devlin. But Nicky Devlin, as he's seemed to prove every time he gets into that position, does really well to beat the man and provide an excellent cross. And then Duke, going back to what Duke does best with an excellent touch and turn to finish and probably give certainly me a feeling of a surprising lead. And I'm sure those in Greece are scenes that they'll remember for a long, long time. And yeah, it was nice to see that come off because we needed to be clinical in that situation. And at the time, obviously, I thought, well, that's giving us something to hold on to. But it shows that we can obviously play that and hit teams on the counter.
Yeah, definitely. I think I was definitely surprised. I was certainly surprised. And the fact we were clinical, we didn't have too many chances. We scored two goals, certainly pleasing. I thought Duke took it really, really well. And it's good to see, you know, between the goal up at Motherwell and now as well, didn't play against Hibs. So that's two games, two goals for him personally, which is good to see because it's just, he's not started excellently, I think it's fair to say. And if we're starting to see him get back into form whilst Miovski's on form, I have two strikers plus the other two champing at the bit, I'm sure, to get involved, it can only be a good thing. And Nicky Devlin, once again, what a signing he's been on a free. I think some people were a little bit concerned and thought, you know, is that Ross McCrory's replacement? Maybe not best pleased. I had a little bit about that. I thought it was maybe a shrewd signing at the time, but he's really stepped up and he played very well again last night. And in the build-up to that goal as well, excellent.
Yeah, and obviously there's a lot of talk in the build-up to the game around Nicky Devlin as well. The Pauk manager was unhappy with him and how he conducted himself at Pittodrie, saying he blew the bench a kiss when we went 1-0 up. And not that I remember seeing that, but there seemed to be a lot of needle between Devlin and the Pauk bench anyway at Pittodrie. So I'm sure he enjoyed being able to, you know, grab himself an assist. But for Duke as well, I'm glad, you know, after obviously not being involved at the weekend, he gets a start, gets the goal, and hopefully we're starting to see now a bit more confidence returning to his play, especially as obviously last night with Bojan not starting, we're needing goals to come from elsewhere. But I thought in general, with that concern I had around Duke being that lone striker, he did that role really well last night. His work rate in terms of trying to close the ball down, there was a couple of times where just as the Pauk defenders were going to clear the ball, he was throwing himself in, maybe just catching them a little bit late at times as well, but that was riling them up as well. And I think we did a quite good job of winding Pauk up last night as well, which obviously threw them off their stride.
I'm certainly glad to see that because they're a gang of shithousing bastards, and I'm glad that we were able to rile them up a little bit. I'm also very glad that Nicky Devlin was able to do so in the first leg, even if maybe came back to bite us in the arse. But no, I thought Duke's work off the ball as well as on it was impressive, and it's really good to see. And hopefully his confidence will be back to a decent place because I think he was struggling with that. It's just a shame we're about to go to Parkhead and then an international break. A bit annoying that's coming this time. However, if he goes into the international break on a decent bit of form, the likelihood of him returning in that form with that confidence is pretty high, you would think.
Yeah, no, totally. And I think it's weird as well then to think that we were disappointed in the way we conceded the equaliser because we'd been playing well, we'd been frustrating Pauk, and we almost kind of let them back into the game in a way. But I mean, it's a good finish, but I think both goals last night we conceded, there'll be aspects of that Barry Robson will felt that we could do better in terms of our defending
a little bit. Certainly the first one, Ruby got sucked in a little bit, and then two players on the line, unfortunately not enough to keep it out. Given the chances Pauk had, you would never have felt we were going to keep a clean sheet.
No.
Just sort of disappointing to concede it in that manner. However, you would probably, you know, look at, you know, compare that with some of the defending we did where perhaps they had fantastic chances and we were throwing bodies on the line, great last-ditch blocks. So it's hard to be too critical of them, just a little bit frustrating not to go all Barry Robson on you there.
Yeah, no, we obviously rode our luck as well. You look at the block that Ruby had where he kind of kills the ball dead and it bounces thankfully onto the post and we managed to clear the danger. But in Europe, it's fair to say VAR hasn't been Aberdeen's best friend, or certainly in recent weeks. And well, Duncan Strachan raised the point, and it was in the notes as well, that Pauk should have been down to 10 men. A stamp from the Pauk captain on the ankle of McGrath right in front of the ref. As well, you text me straight away saying, well, that's a red. And I think the point Duncan makes as well is the fact it was right in front of the ref, because I think Rob McLean and Stephen Cragan spoke about why the referee didn't play advantage if he's only going back to book him. But where was the VAR involvement in that? You look at Dyson Maeda's red card this week, Marcus Rashford's red card, both of those getting upgraded on checks. I don't think there was even a consultation on that incident last night. How that went unpunished other than a yellow's baffling.
Absolute madness. And the boy knew exactly what he was doing as well. An experienced chap, I think well into his 30s. And it was a ridiculous challenge. Should have been a red card. The fact it wasn't checked, or it certainly didn't seem to be checked. We didn't get anything on the telly saying VAR check, potential red card. Absolutely ridiculous. And that's twice in two games against that mob that we've had things just not checked when we certainly should have got the decision, which seems baffling. And it was a bad challenge. Just glad Jamie McGrath was okay, because in the last couple of games he has been through the wars a little bit.
Yeah, he's certainly going to have a few scars from his time at Aberdeen. I noticed in an interview he was doing on Red TV, he still has that kind of scar under his eye from the clash with John Lundstrom at Ibrox. But you spoke about maybe being backs against the wall, a lot of the defensive work that we had to do. And I think it's a credit to the way Barry Robson's obviously drilled that into the players that they remained very disciplined. There was a lot of bodies on the line, but getting in at halftime at 1-1 was probably crucial for us, because it did feel like a bit of an onslaught coming up to halftime, didn't it?
Yeah, it certainly did. That was basically my thought. I said, to be honest, as soon as it went 1-1, I was thinking, right, they'll take this score into halftime. But they were putting bodies on the line. I thought the sort of togetherness that they showed was excellent as well. Clearly defended very well as a unit for the most part, it has to be said, with very good discipline. And I felt it was important if we were going to get anything from the game to go in level at least, especially, you know, in a ground like that. Had they gone in 2-1 up, their fans would have absolutely been well up for it, and that would have made it very difficult to sort of turn that tide from that point at halftime, I felt.
Yeah, and I think that was the feeling I had as well, because not only, as you mentioned, the fans would have been up, but so would the players, and it would have, you know, potentially affected our players negatively going in after all that kind of hard work that we'd done, especially to you know, take the lead in the game as well. And it will have just buoyed those players going in and thinking, right, we've done enough to frustrate them for 45. Let's go again, because they were getting wound up. There was obviously an unsavory incident that's been reported by the club where Papi Habib Gaye was subjected to some racial abuse, and that the club are obviously investigating that with UEFA, and that's, you know, absolutely disgusting and horrible to hear that, you know, he's been a victim of that. And, you know, Jamie McGrath obviously coming out and saying that had the players been aware at the time that they would have, you know, walked off the pitch. So, you know, the players, whilst potentially losing their head on the pitch, the fans, absolutely uncalled for in nature of losing their heads off it at maybe how well we were stifling Pauk, or how poorly they felt their team was playing.
Madness, really, that sort of thing's happening in 2023, nearly 2024. There's no place for it in the game at all. The one thing we can take from it as positive is the way sort of the team seems to rally around him, and Jim McGrath sort of revealing in the changing room afterwards. Papi was understandably very, very upset, probably a bit shaken by what had happened, and the team sort of gathered around him. You saw when we scored the second goal, Reece Williams and Angus McDonald going tonto towards the home end, which I think upset them. Good. I think that shows sort of togetherness, which is, I think, is the only real positive we can take about out of that sort of situation. And the Pauk statement saying it's a thing of the imagination, not verbatim, but loosely, is just absolutely ridiculous. And there's no place for it at all.
Yeah, their statement screams Celtic's defence of Alexander Tonev in the Shea Logan incident, to be fair. And I'm sure UEFA will deal with it in the way UEFA deal with these sort of things. And I think you know what we're alluding to on that. On the game, though, in the second half, we spoke about, you know, Aberdeen going in buoyed probably at halftime, holding Pauk. And I think it's fair to say we maybe expected a bit of an onslaught in the second half, and that was the case. I did feel we were struggling throughout the game, but certainly at the start of the second half, with the way Pauk were pumping balls into the box. They were always attacking the back post, and especially at set pieces. I almost felt concerned we were going to concede every time we conceded a corner.
Yeah, I think they ended up in double figures of corners. I don't think we had one, which is absolute madness. A couple of times, Kel Roos wasn't convincing me coming out and getting something on the ball, but not very much a few of the times. However, I think sort of I'm still impressed with how disciplined they were. I think, of course, when you're defending that long in that sort of situation, that'll take a toll on the mind. Absolutely, we've been very mentally tired, if not physically, which I'm sure they also were. But there was a few hairy moments, to say the least. But the fact, you know, they were still throwing themselves in front of the ball, doing anything that was needed to keep us in that game. Because I think, to be honest, it could have gotten away with us, away from us, with the amount of chances they had. It's a credit to them, at least.
Yeah, Roos was called Dracula at Derby because he was scared of crosses. But I think, you know, the way he dealt with some of the kind of balls yesterday was the same. I kind of the same fear as you. The one in the start of the second half where it felt like it was a really tame shot towards goal, and he dived and just got a hand to tip it around the post, felt weird to me. And then towards the last 5 minutes, when it was already 2-2, he elected to double punch the ball instead of collect it, but he punched it straight out. And I thought, like, okay, it's come off, but can we not do this for another 5 minutes? But like, it became effective, so we can't criticize too much. But it certainly meant a few nails were chewed a bit more, and I was going to say hair got pulled, but I don't have any to do on that as well. But one thing that was also adding to the stress levels, Callum, was the amount of diving that Pauk were resorting to as well. I mean, you talked about them being shithousery. I mean, I think you just call them cheating, to be honest.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we'll speak about the penalty that they were awarded. In fairness to the referee, on first view, and I was like, shit, that looks bad. That looks very, very bad. However, as soon as you saw two replays, it's like, okay, clearly there was no contact. And we'd seen that. We'd seen the two replays. In that sort of situation, I understand it's the referee that's got to make the decision on the pitch or whatever. However, surely VR could just go, don't even fucking bother looking at it. It's ridiculous. Yeah. He didn't get booked for diving, which seems madness.
Apparently you can't, though, on a VAR check. They can't issue a yellow card for diving.
Well, that's another thing that perhaps needs to look. I read somewhere that they could. So very, very bizarre. I think when the referee goes and looks at it and sees it for himself, he should be able to give a yellow card. I also thought he was offside just in the first place anyway, so we wouldn't have even got to that had there been contact, I felt. But absolute madness that they didn't get booked. And Jesus Christ, I don't know how it took so long. Just once again, same as the weekend, just glad that they came to the right decision in the end. But it was nervy. It was a little bit worrying.
Well, I wonder if that's why he didn't get booked then, if obviously you've read that he could get booked on the back of a VAR check, because you mentioned the offside, and obviously that was being talked about as well. So I wonder if they came to the decision he was offside, but I don't remember the referee seeing that he awarded it offside, and also he was looking at a couple of stills, and the bits that we obviously saw on TV of the stills that he was looking at, I thought, oh, for fuck's sake, he's away to award a penalty, because it was the defender falling over Jamie McGrath, not from kind of the angle that shows clear distance between the two players. And I thought, if we're honestly, I do this podcast on a work laptop. I was watching the game on my work laptop. this podcast wouldn't have been going ahead had that been given as a penalty. He was away, got launched across the living room had that been awarded. I mean, even the one earlier in the half as well, when their number seven, who was impressive again last night, I thought with his technical ability, he threw himself to the floor when he glided past Stephen Gartenman. And again, needless, like 2 minute VAR check on that, when that was, again, clear as day, it was a dive.
Yeah. That's European football for you. I think we've learned a lot about that this season. And hopefully, given the fact we are out, that will prepare us better for next season when we inevitably finish third and go straight into the groups once again.
Yeah. On the second goal that we conceded, I also mentioned about Pauk enjoying success, putting the ball into the box. That's probably the one I think Barry's going to be most annoyed at the way we conceded. It was the second phase. And for me, what also was disappointing was we had three defenders around the boy that eventually heads it in. And I think for all the work that we did do, and I know it's easy to switch off in these situations when you've been putting so much, you know, mental strength into that game, it was quite disappointing. But what a reaction after going 2-1 down, which of course we'll come on to.
Yeah, we certainly got the reaction, which is encouraging. However, I do sort of agree in terms of that, you know, many a player surrounding the boy that won the header. I don't want to take anything away from the header, however, because I thought that itself was excellent. Mm-hmm. But one of our boys has just got to go and claim that, put their name on it, and fucking get rid of it any way, shape, or form, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. It was frustrating, and I did think at that time, I thought, well, you know, this is going to be another proud performance, but ultimately nothing to show for it. But Jamie McGrath had other ideas, and I think what we did well last night was win those niggly free kicks that we've got a bad habit of giving away. There was a couple of examples with Bojan doing it and Dante doing it as well when he came onto the pitch, and, you know, almost learning. We've spoken about this campaign being a learning experience, is learning what continental referees are like and going down at that feel of contact, and we'll get the decision. Because there was a couple of times I thought, we've got away with a very soft one here. My initial thoughts when Jamie McGrath was lining up that free kick was the goalkeeper is offering a lot of space to his right, almost teasing Jamie in the sense that you're not going to go for it, you're just going to pump this into the box. Well, Jamie McGrath had other ideas. What a goal.
It was inviting, you felt, wasn't it? And ultimately, the keeper did get a hand to it, and he's probably disappointed, because once you get a hand to it, you'd expect it to be a strong hand. However, take nothing away from the strike. From that distance, to even get on target, if we're honest, let alone sort of with the way the ball moved in the air as well, was very, very impressive. But, you know, I'm really pleased for Jamie McGrath. A lot of questions may be asked when we signed him after we missed out on Tony Oteklich, but I think we are seeing that end product. And, you know, McGrath, he really, really grafts as well, and he's sort of adding end product to his game, which maybe people were concerned about as well, thinking he was a bit of a penalty merchant perhaps. But it is really, really impressive, and he gets battered and bruised every single week, so I'm happy for him. Excellent strike, and again, really happy that the away fans got something to, more to celebrate. That must have been bedlam when that one went in.
Yeah, and Robson really enjoyed it. He was absolutely loving it in that celebration amongst the players. And poor Bojan must have been thinking, oh, I'm getting on now. And he was quickly ushered back to the bench to sit down for an extra 5 minutes. But, you know, we were very critical last time we played Pauk of the way Barry Robson made the substitutions, kind of costing us the game. I thought last night he got those changes spot on. Johnny Hayes coming on for Ryan Duncan, who, to be honest, Ryan Duncan didn't really have his best game. Again, probably in a position that he's not used to. Graham Shinney, understandably, with the amount of work that's gone in, maybe with one eye on Sunday as well, coming off, and Dante Polvara, who we've relied on really well in Europe with another excellent performance. But the other substitution was when he brought on Esther Sokler towards the end to give Miolski a bit of support up top, because I thought both Bojan and Esther were really effective in that kind of last 10-15 minutes and just chasing down lost causes.
Yeah.
When we were just clearing our lines, because there was one example that sticks out was when The Pauk defender was on the edge of his box and Bojan sprinted to chase it and the Pauk defender had to put out for an attacking throw-in. Mm-hmm. And we ended up launching the ball into the box with a long throw-in, which of course, as we know, came to absolutely nothing. But it was just showed that even though both Bojan and Esther had come on, they were willing to put it all in and do the hard work that those before them had done as well.
Yeah, definitely. Sort of similar to Hibs, where a lot of Bojan's work, although ultimately won the one, scored the winning goal, without a lot of his work up there when he was isolated by himself, we maybe mm-hmm. wouldn't have been in the situation to even go on to win that game. And last night, you know, they didn't have a chance, either of them. But the work they did, especially coming off the bench, where perhaps it maybe takes a bit of time to get up to the speed of the game, or it could do that, I thought they were very, very impressive. And it just sort of shows, that willingness that they're all in it together and fighting for the same cause. And they really are working for Barry Robson, which I liked seeing. I think there's a lot of different things that sort of suggest that last night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and an interesting point from Can't Be Bothered here about Esther Sokler and getting him as many minutes as possible with Duke going away with Cape Verde in January. And obviously January is going to be a big month looking at that strike force that we currently have. So it'll be interesting to see how Esther's minutes develop between now and the Christmas period, because we are going to have a lot of games coming up and I'm sure he will be wanting to start games, not just be seen as a bit part player as he is currently.
Yeah, likewise, Barry McGee will be desperate to get involved, I'm sure, too, as well. I think with those nine games in December, we certainly will see Esther Sokler get that chance. And I think now he's sort of bedded in a little bit. He did grab his first goal away at Ross County in the Cup. I'd certainly be happy for him to get his chance. And I think he's earned it just by, you know, probably the patience he's showing alone, if nothing else, because it would be frustrating.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, we've obviously spoke about the work that the majority of the team has done. And I think we have to give a special recognition to the defence for the resolute performance last night. And I think I found Jack McKenzie's YouTube account, because he always comments when Jack McKenzie's played well. PGL Tuna saying that Doric Roberto Carlos was immense again last night. So Jack, if that is you, fair play. You can join Duke as a list of players we know that tune into the show. But Callum, it's fair to say, given the madness that went through Jack's head at the weekend, he was superb last night.
He was brilliant. And, you know, let's take the red card away from that. His performance on Saturday was also very good up to that point. In recent times, he really seems to be kicking on in that sort of natural position. He's making it his own. And, you know, with McGarry back in training, a little bit of competition there as well. Mm. Previously, when McGarry went out, you'd have thought, as soon as he comes back, he would be straight in. But Jack McKenzie's certainly making his case. And I'm happy for it. Look, he's coming for a lot of flack, certainly from us at times as well. But yeah, he is performing. He was very good. The fact he you know, would have, you know, been very disappointed with himself on Saturday, you would feel. And then to come off the back of that and put in a performance like that in a very tough venue against a good side, some tricky wide players, certainly very impressive. And just continuously sort of making... not just us, but I'm sure many Aberdeen fans eat our words, and if I'm honest, I'm very happy about it.
Yeah, no, and I wholeheartedly agree with that as well. Some of his tracking back last night was superb. There was a couple of times when Pauk had their counter-attacks, and we think it was both him and Duke that were getting back to make the blocks or getting into position. And again, you know, he was really like Shinne, Ruby, Jens, and they were not afraid to put their body on the line when it mattered most. Ruby, can't keep him away from the spotlight as well with his, I know you found it rather amusing, the diving header he did into the back of the Pauk player. I can't help but feel, though, that was extremely aided by the fact that the Pauk player behind him kind of lifted him up a little bit as he was already in the air. But you can almost sense that game last night, why there was those kind of talks around Tottenham potentially looking at Ruby. Another, in terms of data, solid performance. Yes, gets dragged into positions he shouldn't, but his recovery for me last night was what impressed me most.
Yeah, I think so. He does do something hilarious every single game, and I think that sort of adds to his charm in a way. But certainly him, well, towards the back end of the game, all three centre-backs, all of the defence, in fact, never mind the centre-backs, to keep that concentration throughout the game that's required in a situation like that and still be, you know, making those last-ditch blocks, last-ditch tackles, getting the ball out of the box by any form, is certainly very impressive. And I think it gives confidence going forward, because those three centre-backs in particular certainly seem to be gelling now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely do. And as Andy B says, when Dante won that free kick in the last minute, the reaction of Devlin McKenzie in the box, no fist bumps, just hands on the knees, knackered, gave everything. Well, there were certainly fist pumps in my household, that's for sure, because I was relieved. I felt that was the final bit of pressure done and dusted. And I think even when the full-time whistle did go, it looked to me, I could be wrong if it was Richard Jensen or not, was a huge fist pump into the air. But I think, you know, proud that they got that point in the end, and it was no more than we deserved. We deserved to actually get a bit of rub of the green in Europe, because as we've discussed already, it's been extremely lacking.
It has been. But yeah, it sort of summed up everything, the fact that they were so clearly drained that free kick. Excellent work from Dante, to be fair, who once again we'll give credit to, because he comes in tough situations and seems to be performing every time at this point, which is certainly encouraging to see, because it's a man we thought everyone was maybe a bit sceptical about in summer. It's encouraging to see, and they deserve the point. And I know we're out of Europe, we've mentioned that, it's pretty well documented, in fact. But the fact we are able to compete sort of at this level with competition like PAOK, who certainly spend a lot more on wages, there's been a lot being made about that this week with Celtic and Atletico Madrid. PAOK certainly pay a lot more on wages than us. Let's be honest, they probably get a bit of money from the TV deal as well. Okay. More fans through the door. They are a decent side. They've got experience of playing on that level. And the fact that we're going and competing with them can only be a good thing, really, can't it?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And as I said, we've competed, held our own, and hopefully we can see this again next season, because that's the only way I think we do learn, is getting to these stages on a regular occurrence. There's no point in making it 17 years again, because then how do you learn? And I think it's certainly given us as fans the incentive and attraction to want to get it again, and I'm sure the players and definitely the board will be wanting to see it. And as well, obviously, a point on the board for us, but yet more Cormac coins coming our way with is €166,000 for a draw. So, and as someone else said to us last night, we might be out, but we've still got €1 million to play for. You know, win those two games, that's an extra million. That is a huge amount of money coming to us. And of course, with some of the transfer rumours going around as well, Yilmaz Ramadani this week coming out linked with a move to Inter Milan. We could see a potential windfall in the sell-on clause that we've got on that contract. Obviously, Lewis Ferguson continuing to impress, links to him with Juventus, although I know Juventus were maybe linked with Calvin Phillips, I saw this week. So maybe Man City are lining up Lewis Ferguson instead. And obviously, we've got
that'll be a shitload of cash.
Yeah, right. And then obviously, we've got the Scott McKenna. He's not in the team just now, but the kind of connections that we've got with Nottingham Forest and staying in the Premiership. So look, potential cash windfalls coming our way, left, right and centre, but money still to be played for in Europe, not just pride. But as well as we've played in Europe, Callum, we're going to speak about domestic matters, because we need to now take that level of performance from Europe and apply it domestically. Graham Shinney, Barry Robson have come out and said we've struggled. They know they've let themselves down when they've gone from the Thursday into the Sunday transition. We've got it again this week. It's a tough ask going to the Champions down at Parkhead, but we were disciplined. We executed the game plan extremely well on Thursday. Surely that will give us enough confidence and belief maybe to say we can do that again on Sunday.
And on the flip side, you'd think Celtic's confidence is on the fucking floor at the moment after that. However, I do worry that they're just going to take it all out on us, as we've sort of seen across Scotland many a time after these kind of things. But it's certainly a reason to take confidence. If they can go to intimidating atmosphere like that, and against sort of all odds, really, come away with a point, then what's Parkhead compared to that, compared to the Greek Radgies in the crowd last night? It's a piece of piss. We've done it before previously. It's been a while. It'll be an interesting battle because, you know, obviously they are very tired physically and emotionally at this point. And it won't get much better throughout December, really. However, I think this is a good test sort of for us to see where we are really at now. There seems to be a real togetherness. Can we go there and get something? I'm not saying we're going to go there and win, but if we can put in a decent performance, maybe get away with a point, then it would certainly be very, very positive given recent results in many, many years gone by down there.
Yeah, and that's the thing as well. Like, our two performances so far at Parkhead under Barry Robson have been pretty terrible so far this season. But, you know, you mentioned Celtic potentially looking to take it out on us after their disappointment in midweek. You know, the SFA are certainly not holding back in helping them, appointing Willie Collum as the man in the middle this weekend. And we've got John Beaton on VAR as well. So, you know, if you've got your tinfoil hat on and your conspiracy theories would say that the world's against us going down there, and it's already as hard as it needs to be. But look, there's no reason why, as you say, that we shouldn't be going to this game with a little bit of confidence based on Thursday night. I'm not sitting here like you saying I expect us to take something, but I certainly feel that anything we do say will be like taken as a positive, because a point from there would be probably more than most of us expect. But I think, you know, looking from an Aberdeen point of view, my concern is we'll probably be just as physically fatigued as Celtic, even though they've had a little bit longer to rest. They're possibly more likely to make changes than we are. I suspect, probably only make two. If that's what we see, Celtic have got a bit more depth that they can utilise. I mean, you just look at last night where Pauk, on the back of beating Olympiacos, made six changes to that starting lineup. And we made two from a team that had beaten Hibs. And to be honest, the two changes that I do see going into this game would be potentially Duncan and Ryan Duncan dropping out for Miowski and Clarkson. But you could even say you could just make one and drop Ryan Duncan out for Bojan Miowski and go with two strikers going into that game.
Oh, God, I don't know about two strikers given our surprising performance with this sort of 5-4-1. I think we should personally stick to that. I think that'll give us the best chance. I'd like to see Danny Povara come in for this game, if I'm honest. I think his sort of physicality and his technical quality as well, and just the work he puts in, would certainly be excellent. Then you've probably got the option of taking one of Clarkson or Barron off the bench, you know, and perhaps to make things happen, should we be in that situation. However, if we're not in that situation, I do wonder, will there be any mention of the budgets after Celtic's result over the week?
Probably not. I suppose it depends what the result is on Sunday. Maybe if we win, no wonder if they'll come out crying about the budgets. We can certainly shout from the rooftops about it, that's for sure. In terms of Celtic, how do you think they do approach this game? You know, tends to be when we go down there, it's going to be a fast start. You mentioned obviously the frustrations as well. Do you think we'll have to deal with yet again some sustained pressure for large parts?
Nailed on from Lee Seymour, Liam Scales 1-0 Celtic. I wouldn't be surprised, given sort of the way Ryan Christie went back there and performed against us. It will be very, very difficult. It'll be similar to Pauk in that it will be backs against the wall for a lot of the time, you'd imagine. You just hope that when we do get the chance to counter-attack, we do it and don't just hoy it up the park and then face even more pressure from Celtic. Celtic will be out to bounce back. There's no doubt about it. We've seen them put us away many a time at Celtic Park. They'll be looking to do the same again. So it'll be, once again, for us, defending resolute, keeping that concentration, hopefully no individual errors this time. And there's a little bit of hope for me, given our recent run of form. I know that'll be obliterated inside 10 minutes. But let's just hope that's not the case.
Yeah. With Lee Seymour saying that Liam Scales 1-0 Celtic, that would just be an absolutely horrible way to lose. But given what we've seen of Liam Scales as well, we know obviously where his strengths lie and we know where his weaknesses lie as well. Potentially something we can look to exploit in terms of the Celtic back line. I guess for me, the concern is that the pace they've got up front, we mentioned being tired. Maeda's had a decent rest, but doesn't really feel like he ever needs a rest. He's like a Duracell bunny up and down that pitch, and Kyogo's difficult to deal with at the best of times, and he just needs the slightest of touch to throw himself to the ground. So I guess at least we've had a little bit of practice with folk that like to throw themselves to the ground cheaply in Pauk, so we're well prepared for facing Kyogo this weekend.
Absolutely. It's just annoying that he is really, really good, to be honest. However, I'll play the narrative a little bit here. Some of their players like to throw themselves to the deck. The treatment they get compared to, let's say, Luis Enrique de Barros Lopez, when he does it, they don't quite match up. So let's keep that energy going into this game, shall we?
Yeah, very true. Interesting you mentioned seeing Dante Polvara come into the team potentially going into this game, because I guess Ryan Duncan was giving us more of an out ball, so I'm assuming you would see Dante kind of in place of Ryan Duncan for this game. And how would you expect then kind of that midfield of Polvara, Shinne and Barron, if we stayed with that kind of what started last night, going into this game?
Well, that was sort of thinking. And then you've got McGrath, who'll get up closer to the striker, whoever that may be, presumably Miovski, which I think is a role he does very well, to be fair. Yeah. And you'd expect, I think with those three, there's a good combination of sort of Shinne's legs and the grit he brings. Polvara brings a bit of that as well, a bit more physicality. And then Conor Barron works very, very hard. He's a small boy, but he works very, very hard and has been excellent so far this season. And he's also got that little bit of technical quality. If you were to maybe bring him out for Leighton Clarkson, it'd be pretty similar, you would think. However, I think those three with McGrath ahead of them would be my preferred option. But you know what? In recent times, off the evidence, recent times rather, I'll trust Barry Robson. I didn't complain last night, even though I maybe wanted to, about the starting 11. And it worked. So, look, obviously he knows better than me. Who'd have thunk it?
Yeah, sometimes it is just better keeping your thoughts to yourself until full time. But I was doing a piece for a Celtic podcast called The Cynic before we came live this lunchtime. And their key player that they identified from an Aberdeen point of view was Conor Barron, because of his impressive performances so far this season. You know, surprising, I thought they might have picked Bojan, but I was wondering if they were maybe looking for an inside report given his contract situation. But it's interesting that given kind of where Conor was last season to this season, that he is being identified as other teams as a key player to stop. And that was kind of my point. I kind of think he's quite pivotal to our midfield in terms of distributing the ball and going forward, or slowing the play down and, you know, sending it back to Ruby to reset if there's no options on. So I'd personally like to see Conor retain his starting place. I just wonder though if Dante starts, if what happens if Shinne tires, because Shinne for Clarks, and it doesn't offer that kind of same fit in midfield. So there's, I guess, maybe with the 2 week break coming up now, we can just try and get 90 minutes out of Shinne. That's maybe, as I said, when he came off on Thursday, there was one eye looking ahead to the weekend's game.
Yeah, that is a concern I share. But it is very interesting to hear other teams sort of pinpoint Barron as the key man. I don't think it's a situation we'd have thought we'd have been in at this point of the season. But I think it's a credit to how well he has done. He seems to have sort of, you know, put a little bit of injury spell behind him. He's got his head down, knuckling down, and he's certainly performing. I just hope that it is beyond this season.
Yeah. Well, there's obviously still the contract talks to iron out, and I know he was put in front of the media a couple of weeks ago, and it was very Football Manager-esque. In terms of some of his responses, it was like he was getting to choose the options. But we'll hopefully get some word on that as the weeks progress, I'm sure. But look, we'll see this. We're going into this game with hope, I think, more than expectation. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah, that tends to be the case when we go to Glasgow, to be fair.
Yeah, it really is. So we'll see what comes out of that hope. At the weekend, of course, the game kicking off on Sunday. We'll be back after a week, because obviously going into the international break, I'm going on holiday this weekend. Callum's going to enjoy his birthday. Well, you're working at Tesco from 6 till midnight, so it's not really the best, but you've got the weekend to enjoy it. So we'll be taking a week off and then coming back after the Scotland game, Scotland-Norway on the Sunday. So we'll probably be back maybe a Monday live, looking back at this weekend's action against Celtic and, of course, the return of domestic football as Rangers come to Pittodrie on the following Sunday. So thank you very much to those of you that have tuned into the podcast here live this lunchtime. Callum, have a good rest of your birthday.
Thank you very much, and thank you very much for all the birthday wishes in the comments as well. And Glenn, enjoy Disneyland and your wee boy's birthday as well.
Yes, I know Rory's birthday tomorrow, and I'll have the Disney ears on from Sunday, so I'll send you a picture because I know you will be desperate to see what that looks like. But have a good weekend, folks. Those that are going to Parkhead, enjoy the game and bring 3 points back north. That would be brilliant. See you next time.
Sports Social Podcast Network.